Chariot Solutions TechCast number 34, James Ward of Adobe on Flex 4 and Flash Builder. Today's featured guest is James Ward, technology evangelist for Flex at Adobe Systems. It's been roughly a year since we last chatted, and at the time, Flex 3 was becoming quite popular. I caught up with him to discuss the upcoming late 2009 release of Flex 4, the rebranded Flash Builder 4, and other subjects such as remoting, MVC frameworks, and more. So my guest today is James Ward of Adobe. How are you doing, James?
Good. Hey, Ken. How are you?
Good. James is, you're an evangelist and consultant for Flex and Air on Adobe's tool suite?
Yeah. I evangelize Flex and the Flash platform, focusing primarily on the enterprise software development community, a lot of Java developers, and do some open source stuff as well. So, yeah, that's what I do at Adobe.
Right. And we talked last year, when Flex 3 was really coming into its own. So I thought we'd round back this year and see what's going on with Flex these days. I did notice you've been doing a lot of stuff over the last 6 months or so with Bruce Eckel.
Yeah. So Bruce and I worked together on the book Very First Steps in Flex. And then we also turned a couple of the chapters from that book into a DZone ref card. So we've been working together on a bunch of stuff. And it's great to see Bruce, doing some cool stuff with Flex and getting excited about it. So we're looking to also begin doing some screencasts that will be from examples that are in the book. So it's a lot of fun stuff going on with Bruce.
That'll be great. Now, I guess, the main thing is you've been busy pretty much working with Flex 3 in the field. Are people starting to look at Flex 4 and kick the tires on the beta?
Yeah, definitely. We had the pre-release. It went live a little over a month ago now, and it's been great. A lot of people have downloaded it and are starting to play with the beta. We also launched the Flash Catalyst beta, the first ever public beta of Flash Catalyst, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So there's a lot of new stuff for people to play with. A whole new component architecture called Spark in Flex 4, and then a number of just changes and improvements to what's now being called Flash Builder 4. So that's a rebrand of Flex Builder to be more consistent with the Flash platform. For the next version of Flex Builder, it'll be called Flash Builder 4.
Okay. So if you're a Flash developer, I should say a Flex developer right now with Flex 3, some of the big enhancements or things that are coming up with Flex 4, I guess you can start if you want with kind of the UI enhancements, like you mentioned, the Spark library.
Right. Yeah. So we kind of separated out into three major pieces. They all have some overlapping themes, but there's the Flex SDK, which is the open source SDK just for building applications, the building blocks and compiler and debugger and the sort of things that you need to build Flex applications. So Flex 4, the Flex SDK 4, the big changes there are the new component model. So what we wanted to do was make it easier to change the look and feel of Flex components, really. And so what a big focus of Flex 4 has been is to develop a new component model that we're calling Spark. And the Spark component model has a better separation between the skin, the visual kind of appearance and interactivity of a component, and then the actual internal logic of a component. So this has been a huge focus. There's a number of new components that already existed in the old component model, which we're calling Halo, but have now been moved into Spark. So things like a new list control that is based on the Spark architecture and buttons and kind of just some of the regular stuff there. So then also a big important piece of Flex SDK 4 was to make sure that there's interoperability between the Spark components and the Halo components. So it allows people to still use components that were built prior to the Spark architecture inside of a Flex 4 application. So those are some of the big changes. Also, you know, one of the most requested things for Flex 4 was a faster compiler. And so that is, a lot of work has gone into that, and it's definitely a lot faster now in the Flex 4 betas. So that's good. Also some language changes with the MXML language. So the MXML dialect for building applications has been changed. You can choose when you program whether you want to use the new dialect, which we're calling kind of MXML 2009, or the older MXML dialect. And so there's some just changes in the language to clean it up, make it more clear. For example, in the old MXML, you mixed and matched in an MXML class. You mixed and matched instance properties on a class and things that were supposed to be passed as default, or passed as parameters to the default object on the class, or default parameter on the class. And so in the 2009 namespace, which you could choose to use or choose not to use, you have to put things that are instance properties on a class inside of a declarations tag. And so that just cleans up the language and makes it clear, you know, what is going to the default property and then what is actually instance properties on the class. So there's some other changes like that just clean up the MXML language.
So now if you're developing currently in 2006 format, which is the current namespace, and you want to get on to the Flex SDK 4, do you just leave everything as is and it uses the existing namespace and everything's compatible, or are there some breaking changes for compatibility?
So if you wanted to take advantage, if you moved to Flex 4 and you didn't change any of your code, things should still pretty much work the way they do today. If you wanted to start taking advantage of some of the new language features in MXML 2009, then you would need to change your top-level tag to specify to use the 2009 namespace instead of the 2006 namespace. And that's what would tell the compiler, you know, which dialect of MXML to use. So it's really should be pretty easy for people to move to Flex 4 and then kind of incrementally begin to take advantage of the new features like the 2009 MXML namespace, the Spark architecture. You know, everything should be a pretty easy transition. If you want to move to Flex 4 and just get benefits like a faster compiler, then you don't necessarily have to go, you know, switch everything over to Spark and switch to 2009 namespace. So those features will work, you know, no matter what namespace you're using.
Now, also back to that faster compiler, we have some developers here that do like Maven builds and they kick off, you know, the Flex compiler during Maven, and they've noticed that the times could use some improvement. What kind of order of magnitude are you going to see potentially with this new compiler?
It depends on the project and you know, how your project is structured. You know, we've seen improvements, you know, up to, let's say, 10x, maybe even 20x, 20x on some projects, which is pretty significant. The difference usually comes into how many libraries are you linking against in your projects, because the major performance benefit that we're getting now is by caching libraries. And so what we were doing before is every single time you compiled a project, we would have to read all the information about all the libraries that you were compiling against, and there was no caching of that information. And so the big change that really sped things up. There was a number of other ones. The big one was that now we're caching the library information. And so, you know, perhaps on the first time that you run the compiler, it may not make much difference on compile speed, but subsequent compiles should be significantly faster. A lot of the compile time before was just reading libraries and that sort of thing. So, and then there's also some other caching that goes on for incremental compiles. So when you do an incremental build, those should be a whole lot faster. So there's a few different metrics. Kind of depends on what you know, what you're doing and how your project is set up. But most people should see pretty significant performance benefits with the new compiler.
Now, I was kind of digging my way through the SDK and reading up on things, and I've noticed there's a kind of a new format, the FXG kind of vector graphics format namespace, I suppose.
Yeah, so that's one of the big improvements in Flex 4 related to Flash Catalyst is the ability to do vector drawing with this FXG language. And the FXG language is in some ways similar to SVG, but when we didn't want to kind of be held down by the SVG specification or even be an extension of it. And the reason for that is that we wanted to have the best possible performance when you're using vector drawing in Flex applications. And so to do that, what we actually did was we modeled the language after the Flash Player primitive drawing routines. And by doing that, when we actually compile Flex applications now that use FXG, we compile down into a special Swift format that allows the drawing functions to run primitively, and so they're going to be much, much faster. And so the language looks a bit like SVG, but definitely has no relationship to the SVG specification. So the other major benefit of FXG is that all of the latest versions of Adobe's creative tools, so Photoshop, Illustrator, Fireworks, I think are the three that do this, can export to FXG. So if you have, an image that a designer is working on in any of those tools, they can export that to the developer as FXG, and then the developer is given this declarative XML-based language essentially that describes the vectors or the paths, the gradients, all sorts of different aspects of what was in the creative tools. So that's a huge benefit now for developers and being able to not just move bitmap assets between the designers and the developers, but really be able to deal with the vector-based stuff. And again, have that all stuff all performance optimized by Flash Player when it's running.
So now with these new tools we're talking about, like for specifically, there's Flash Catalyst, so you can kind of have that back and forth with the designers. Is that really kind of a one-way tool where you start developing a Flash Catalyst and generate your project and hand it over to the developers, or can you kind of use it from both aspects, designers working in Catalyst and developers working in Flash Builder?
Yeah, definitely. Our goal is to get the round trip going, and that may or may not work, on a holistic level, because at some point, you're gonna move the developer's gonna move the application code into some framework that Catalyst just isn't gonna be able to really understand, or
Like an MVC
it
tool
may
or
get.
something, yeah.
Right, exactly. And so at that point, you may not be able to round trip on the entire application, but I think that what we're aiming towards is definitely allowing you to round trip on at the component level. So while the designer is working in Catalyst and adding interactions to components and designing, animations and those sorts of things, that they could round trip with the developer on that, so that the developer is not having to program the interactions. And I should say just a little bit about Flash Catalyst since we jumped into that. So Flash Catalyst is a tool that bridges between the creative tools, the Adobe creative tools, so Photoshop, Illustrator, and Fireworks, and to Flex. So it allows designers to bring artwork into this tool, Flash Catalyst, and then begin turning that artwork into an actual functioning application. And as they're doing that, it's actually writing Flex code. And so then what they do is export that to what's called an FXP, Flex Project format, and then give that to the developer. The developer then imports that FXP into Flash Builder, and then has all the code that was generated from what the designer did. So, this is really for like interaction designers, people doing prototypes, and we're just trying to really tighten that loop between the developers and the designers.
If I'm a developer on Flash Builder, using Flash Builder 3, what are some of the changes that are coming for Flash Builder 4, like productivity enhancements, things like that?
Yeah, there's one of my favorite things is there's ASDoc integration now right into Flash Builder, so you can see ASDocs as tooltips, while you're doing coding. There's unit testing now built in, so you can run your unit tests right within Flash Builder. Also, there's a new network monitor that makes it really easy to debug and see what's going on across the network, rather than having to set up Charles or whatever. You can now see the network traffic right inside of Flash Flash Builder. So that's a great one. You know, some new refactoring support and a number of other, you know, little improvements, a lot of improvements to design view, a lot of improvements to the interaction with designers through the FXP import and the FXG import. And so so there's, you know, quite a few pieces going on related to just helping developers to work better with designers, whether they're in Catalyst or in the creative tools.
You know, I was kicking the tires on it yesterday and today, and I did notice, I think it was right-click, you know, generate click script or something like that, just to get things going with events on buttons and things like that. I don't know if that's new.
Yeah. Yeah, that is new in Flash Builder 4. So
I've wanted that for a while.
yeah, that is nice. Yeah. So that's a good one. There's also some new features for connecting to backend data services. So whether you're using PHP, Cold Fusion, Java, SOAP Web Services, RESTful Web Services, you can now follow some wizards that will generate some code for you that hooks your UI objects up to your backend services. And can do, you know, all the CRUD operations, and even I think in the case of some backends, handle paging automatically. And so those are the new DCD features. That was one of the other major focuses for Flash Builder 4, was to really improve how developers connect to their backend servers and services.
So now, you know, you're doing development in Flash Builder 4. You know, the target platform is Flash Player 10, right? I guess you would just, what's the upgrade path there for developers? Do they just change the required Flash player and it should just upgrade automatically like Flash likes to do?
Yeah, so from the developer standpoint, when they start doing a project in Flex 4, then it will, using Flex SDK 4, so whether they're doing that via, I believe that you might be able to do it from Flex Builder 3, use the Flex 4 SDK, but definitely if you're doing a Flex 4 project in Flash Builder 4, then that will automatically target Flash Player 10. And it also, by default, has the detection and upgrade kind of scripts built into those applications. So if someone with Flash Player 9 comes to your application, then it will do the, you know, one-click auto-update thing.
Yeah. And from what I've read lately, it seems like Flash Player 10 is really kind of focusing on performance a bit. For graphical operations, right?
Yeah, Flash Player 10, that's been out for, what, like 9 months now or something? And it's already up. We just posted our latest June 2009 version penetration stats that are done by a third party. So in what we call the mature markets, Flash Player 10 is already at 86.7% adoption. So that was pretty good. And we also did a study recently on specifically enterprise markets to see, you know, what are how does the adoption differ? And it was a bit lower for Flash Player 10 in the enterprise markets, but Flash Player 9, I think, was about 98% in the enterprise market. So that was really good to see, and hopefully Flash Player 10 continues to be adopted quickly in there. So Flash Player 10 adoption is great. There were a number of new features in Flash Player 10. The FXG stuff was obviously one, and faster rendering performance. Then also some stuff that's relevant to Flex developers is the new text layout framework. So all of the kind of core text stuff, text rendering stuff in Flash Player 10 was rebuilt, and Flex 4 will be taking advantage now of that text layout framework. So there's a few different kind of layers of the new text rendering. There's the low-level Flash Player APIs, and then there's a Flash text layout framework, and that's what Flex 4 now uses for its text rendering. So there's some great new features in this for being able to do like right to left, which is something, you know, a lot of people have wanted for a while. You know, some strange character sets, working better with system fonts, so being able to change alpha and rotations and stuff on system fonts, which is something we weren't able to do before. So
right. So one of my I saw was like, you know, just acceleration based on graphics cards. It looks like they're even doing like hardware acceleration where possible.
Yeah, that's one of the things right now, it's only being used for I think full screen video playback. Yeah, and some of the interesting things kind of related to enterprise developers are the new vector data format, which is a much more optimized format for storing data in memory, improved over array. So the vectors get, and the vector is also a typed array, which is nice. New file upload and download APIs, so being able to do upload and download, from the client, which is actually come in handy for me a few times on a few applications. Where usually, if we wanted to do like a download, we would have to go to the server, get the file from the server, and send it to the client. But now in Flash Player 10, we can now just have a byte array essentially in memory and initiate a file download, and then that will initiate or send from the client side, so you don't have to do that server round trip again if you already have the data, or if you generate the data on the client side, and then upload works similarly. We used to have to go upload all the way to the server. Now with Flash Player 10, you can upload just to the client, essentially into memory, and then you can choose however you want. So those make some things quite a bit easier. New 3D effects in Flash Player 10. There's a lot of things that 3D is in enterprise applications isn't always necessary, but you can definitely build in a lot of cases a better user experience when you can take advantage of rotations, 3D rotations and stuff. So that's pretty cool. And then Flex 4 actually does more to take advantage of the 3D effects than Flex 3 did. And so layout support for 3D and 3D effects and some of these things are now built into Flex 4. Instead of having to do like Paper Vision 3D for simple 3D transformations and stuff, now you can just do it natively.
Let's talk a bit about the back end here. So, you've been spending a lot of time, I'm sure, kind of at potential customer engagements looking at remoting for different applications. So what are the patterns you keep seeing repeated? Obviously Blaze DX, and this is according to the Census benchmark and other things. Seems to beat a lot of the other remoting technologies hands down speed wise. But what kind of patterns for like servers and client configurations are you seeing lately that developers should be paying attention to if they're building a Flex project?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely there's a lot of options for how you connect Flex to the server. Some of the most straightforward is just to do RESTful style XML or SOAP. And that's easy and it works, and you don't necessarily have to change anything on the back end to make that work. And that's great. But I tell people that when they control both sides of the wire, they have control over the server and the client, then it's best to be as optimized as you can in the communication between the two. And so that's where AMF really has a huge benefit, in that it's a binary protocol, and it results in much smaller packet sizes usually. It's much faster to deserialize on the client. So there's all sorts of great benefits to AMF. We published a specification for AMF. I think it was over a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And so since then, there's been a number of open source implementations of AMF for really every backend system that exists. And so you can drop a AMF library into your server, and then be taking advantage of AMF pretty quickly. And so the Adobe's implementation, open source implementation of AMF is Blaze DS. Java implementation. And so a lot of people in the Java community are now using Blaze DS as their mechanism for transferring data back and forth across the wire. And not just the performance benefits of doing the serialization with AMF, but also there's developer productivity benefits, because you don't have to worry about the serialization tier. It just is all built in. You just take objects, and the server will automatically turn them into AMF, and then on the client, AMF automatically gets turned back into objects, and you can preserve object typing back and forth across the wire. So it definitely makes programming quite a bit faster as well.
Now, some of the open source implementations of AMF that are out there, like for example on the Ruby side, what have you seen people using, for example, on Ruby on Rails?
Yeah, so there's been quite a few people that have documented, how to set up Ruby with AMF. There's a library out there, I think it's just called Ruby AMF, and people have plugged that now into Ruby on Rails so that it makes it really easy to just remote your Ruby on Rails objects and kind of data structures out to the Flex application. I think some people have even gone a step further done some stuff to optimize, not having to recreate a lot of the plumbing code. I haven't looked too deep into that stuff. I think there's even a book now out, specifically on using Flex and Ruby together. So there's definitely a lot of people doing it, and definitely is a good option if you're using Ruby to look at doing AMF with Ruby.
Yeah, we have actually a couple development teams right now working with Flex, and one of them is doing kind of BlazeDS with Spring. The other group is doing Ruby on Rails, and I think they may be using Ruby AMF.
Oh, cool.
Now, I remember last time we talked, you had mentioned that Bruce Eckel was a big Python fan.
Yeah,
Is
he is.
is he doing any kind of remoting back and forth to Python? And if so, is he using, is there a Python
Yeah.
AMF?
Yeah, there is. It's just called PyAMF, and it's great. They recently in PyAMF rewrote the AMF kind of serialization and deserialization code into a C library, and I forget the terminology for how you do that in Python. But so Python has some way to essentially write libraries in C, and so when they did this, their performance went through the roof, and now it's a pretty darn fast. It might be even be the fastest AMF implementation there is. So the PyAMF library is great. Definitely a lot of people using that too with frameworks like Django, Twisted, all sorts of things. So it's become kind of a staple in the Python world for especially for anyone doing Flex work.
Backing up to the Flex side, I've seen some people doing MVC work in Flex. Was it Cairngorm, I believe, is an MVC for it?
Yeah.
Do you see a particular MVC you like more or less that you would look at and say, if I'm going to do that separation concerns, that it would be something you'd want to go for?
Yeah, there's it's kind of like turning into the world of Java, where there's essentially one framework for every developer now. So there's a lot of options out there. There's the old, most kind of mature, and probably still today the most used framework, which is Cairngorm, and that follows a pretty much MVC pattern. It was taken from the core J2E patterns,
Right.
and it gets complaints a lot because it does require quite a bit of boilerplate code. But the benefit of that is that then you always know where things are in the code, and you can expect that, just based on naming conventions, where to find code, and that makes it easy for a lot of developers to work together. So there's still a lot of people using that. There's a bit newer ones that are out there, like Mate, which is still MVC, pretty much MVC based. Then there's Pure MVC, and a few other MVC ones out there. The ones that I've been getting some interest lately and are pretty interesting are the more dependency injection style frameworks for Flex that are newer and starting to catch on more. So there's one that used to be called Prana and is now called Spring Action Script. So they've kind of partnered with the Spring folks to create like essentially a client-side Spring framework. And so that one's interesting, especially if you're doing Spring stuff. Swizz is another IOC one.
That's got a great
There's
name.
Yeah, Swizz is good, and Swizz looks pretty interesting. Haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but a lot of people I talk to are pretty interested in Swizz. It's supposed to be just pretty simple IOC stuff, so it's not very monolithic. There's one called Smarty Pants IOC. So there's a number of different ones out there. There's one that I just ran across the other day that looked pretty interesting. It's called Parsley, by I think it's a company called Spice Factory or something. And that one had a lot of interesting features in it. And it was kind of a had way more than just regular IOC. It had IOC, it had a global event bus, it had logging framework. So I need to check out Parsley a bit more and see you know, what all is in there and stuff. But you know, one of the reasons why I think people are starting to move away a little bit from the MVC approach is that especially when your applications get large, MVC kind of poses a problem with modularity of applications. So being able to break applications into pieces. And you can certainly do it with MVC architectures, but when your entire application architecture is MVC, it does become hard to break it into pieces and modularize it. So that's where I think we'll see more of the IOC ones gain some traction is on large applications that need to be modularized. And so, you know, via dependency injection and loose coupling, you know, I think that they'll be able to modularize more easy than the MVC ones that are I think almost entirely based on singletons, which don't deal well with modules.
Is it almost like the debate between you know, I'm thinking like Spring MVC type developers with their approach versus kind of JSF composited UIs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, just like in the world of Java, there's 3 million libraries to choose from, and yeah. So Flex is kind of turning into that. You know, I always tell people try some of them and see which one, you know, fits with you best, and you know, because it really doesn't matter. The most important thing is to have an architecture that you use that makes your code organization predictable and you know, allows people to work in teams effectively. So you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really totally matter what framework you use. It's just important to use a framework, and that could even be something as simple as, you know, hand rolling your own kind of MVC, which I do pretty often. Mm-hmm. With just a couple singletons. So you know, it unless you're building something that is you know, thousands of developers, you know, for 5 years and that sort of scale, then you know, the decision, many times we spend more time trying to make the decision than we actually save by, you know, making the right decision. So it's best just to you know, make a decision quickly and you know, not get caught up in the religious battles over which framework is better than which framework. So
sure.
So I just tell people pick one and go for it.
Right. The ActionScript language, is that getting an upgrade with this, or is that pretty stable at this point?
Yeah, ActionScript is pretty stable. ActionScript is really implemented by Flash Player, and Flash Player is the place where changes would need to happen if we wanted to make changes to the ActionScript language. And so in Flash Player 10, there weren't any major changes to ActionScript other than the addition of Vector and adding a new kind of language element to ActionScript 3 to add the type specification to a vector, which was a new language syntax for ActionScript. So you know, that was one kind of small change in ActionScript 3 in Flash Player 10. I don't know if in Flash Player 11 if we'll see any other language changes. Right now, the Flash Player team is really pretty focused on performance and on optimizing Flash Player for mobile devices. So I'm not sure if they're going to invest a whole lot right now into language changes.
Yeah, can you get someone over there to complain to Apple and get Flash on the iPhone?
Yeah. I mean, we're trying. Our engineers are working on it. So
I'm sure.
So
hopefully.
Hopefully they get that working soon.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've got different issues with mobile devices. I'm thinking like the Android and other SDKs and platforms. Like, what are some of the challenges of writing a Flash application on a device like that?
You know, first we have to get the runtimes working there, and so that's what our Flash Player and Air teams are currently working on, is just to get the mobile runtimes working well. So we need to get Flash Player 10, we need to get Air working great on mobile devices, and so that actually means quite a bit of reengineering of core internals of the runtimes, because for instance, the way that our JIT compiler worked uses too much memory for most mobile devices, and so the engineering teams are working on, you know, reworking the internals of the JIT compiler, and you can actually see some of that going on the Mozilla Tamarin. If you follow the Mozilla Tamarin mailing list, which is the Mozilla Tamarin is the the core of Flash Player Virtual Machine, and also the core of Mozilla's new JavaScript interpreter, which I think they call it NanoJIT or something. So that core VM work is being done on Tamarin, on the Tamarin project, and so you can follow and see what's going on. But obviously what they're doing is they're trying to get the mobile, the runtime working well on mobile devices. So, you know, there's power constraints, there's CPU constraints, there's memory constraints, and so the first step is to get it running well on those devices. We recently announced that we do have it working, and we'll be putting it on the HTC Hero Android phone. I think it's Android. Yeah, Android phone.
I think you're right on that, yeah.
So that's exciting. That's kind of the first major one, I think, that we'll be shipping with Flash Player 10. So then for developers, you know, developers really need to have the runtime out there before we can begin building applications for that runtime. Once the runtime is readily available on the devices that we're targeting, then building applications for those devices for Flex developers, I think, is going to be a bit challenging. The reason for that is that if you look at the memory usage of Flex applications, you know, it can get pretty high, much higher than most mobile devices will really allow you to get. And so one of the things that we're looking at for the future is to possibly come up with some lightweight framework or you know, some way to reduce memory consumption in Flex applications. You know, obviously people probably won't be having like advanced data grids on their mobile devices and, you know, some of the more complex components. So, you know, can we do stuff in a lighter weight way to really support the development for those mobile devices? So a lot of that stuff isn't really yet to be determined yet, because we're kind of waiting for the runtimes to get up to speed and get onto the mobile devices.
Gotcha. Okay. So where are you going to be in the next couple of months? Are you going on the circuit? Who are you talking to?
Yeah. So I think I've got a number of Java user group presentations across the U.S. coming up. So I'll be hitting the road and you know, talking about Flex at the Java user groups. And I don't remember offhand where all those will be. And remember, Detroit, Chicago, San Diego, and a number of others. So I think I have about eight or 10 lined up already. So that'll be consuming a lot of my time over the next few months. And you know, those are a lot of fun for me because I've been a Java developer for a long time. So it's always good to go hang out with my friends in the Java community. So yeah, so that's it. And then WMAX is coming up. So that'll be a lot of fun. That's in Los Angeles this year. And just regular conferences, you know, all over.
And you have a blog at jamesward.com/blog, right?
Yep, that's right. Yep, just jamesward.com. And another exciting thing that's going on actually today, we'll be filming a new episode of Drunk on Software.
Oh,
which
yeah,
is
forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so that's a video podcast that one of my friends, John Rose, and I do. And it's kind of like Oprah for geeks. You know, we basically just sit around and drink and talk about software and whatever. And so we've filmed, I think, about 13 episodes of that.
Fantastic.
Have a lot of fun doing it. And, you know, it's fun, I think, for people just to grab a beer, sit around and, you know, pretend like they're there with us, you know, having these conversations that a lot of times we only have in the bars at conferences. So it's a lot of fun to do that. So that's just drunkonsoftware.com.
That's great though. I'll have to get a hold of that and take a look at it. Almost like Dignation for techies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, fantastic. Well, James, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
Thanks to James for speaking with me today. You can catch him on his blog, www.jamesward.com/blog, or visit his videocast with John Rose at www.drunkonsoftware.com. Yep, you heard it, beer and developers. The videocast is entertaining and quite informative. Our podcast theme is Free Theme Number 3 from podcastthemes.com. We welcome listener feedback. Send us email at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. For more information about Chariot and our services, visit www.chariotsolutions.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.